You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Spring break isn't what it used to be. It's better. This spring, stay 3 nights and get a $50 Best Western gift card. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Visit bestwestern.com for complete terms and conditions.
How many discounts does USAA auto insurance offer? Too many to say here. Multi-vehicle discount, safe driver discount, new vehicle discount, storage discount, legacy.
How many discounts will you stack up? Tap the banner or visit usaa.com/autodiscounts. Restrictions apply.
Ready to relax in your dream bath retreat without the stress of figuring out every detail yourself? At the Home Depot, your bath upgrade is covered. Shop fully designed rooms and curated bath collections to go from inspiration to transformation fast. Savings of up to 40% will make it easier on your budget. And find everything you need, from tubs to toilets and all the tile in between, to bring your vision to life. The Home Depot. Dream baths built here.
All right, everybody. This is the How to Hunt Turkey podcast. My name is Dan Johnson. I'm your host. And today's special guest, Mr. Jimmy Smith. Not only is Jimmy a turkey hunter, but he works for a turkey hunting company, Knight & Hale. Jimmy, how are we doing today, man?
I'm doing good, buddy. A little cold here in Pennsylvania, but we're making it through. You know what I say? It's one day closer to turkey season, Dan.
And I tell you what, I don't know why. So my wife is downstairs, and we had a little bit of like a scare this past weekend with an asthma attack, but now she's on bed rest, okay? And one of the shows that she's been kind of flipping through is like The Real Housewives of You mm-hmm. Name a Town. I thought it would be sweet if there was like, Jimmy, if you were on a show called The Real Husbands of Turkey Season.
And I don't know if I'm probably an absentee husband at that point, because once right. turkey season hits, I'm gone. So, mm-hmm.
right. And you're actually, that's pretty funny. So the idea is that you're not even in it. It's just a bunch of women whose husbands have left for turkey season.
I think we need to have some shirts made for that, Dan. We could probably make some money, you know?
I know,
these
right?
guys out there, they just disappear in turkey season. They don't come back until June.
Exactly. So. Exactly. It's funny you bring that up, because I have a group of guys who live in Wisconsin. And in Wisconsin, depending on what year it is, one of their latest season in Wisconsin sometimes ends on the 1st or 2nd of June. Yep. And so some of these guys, it's their goal to kill a bird in June, and they've yep. done it before. So I've always found that, because heck, by May, I'm usually done with right, turkey yeah. hunting and on to fishing or something different.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a great goal, because you know what, as that season rolls on, those turkeys get a little bit tougher. They've had everything thrown at him at that mm-hmm. point, right? So, you know, yep. A consistent hunter, if he sticks with it, you know, he can definitely kill one in June.
Yeah.
I don't know if I have, but I'm sure there's guys out there.
I don't like sitting in poison ivy, and I don't like sitting in ticks. And I'm just imagining what it would be like to be dripping sweat in June chasing a turkey in tick-infested poison ivy. Like, just the worst-case scenario. I don't want it. I'll kill him in April.
You know, they say the turkey hunter is a different kind of guy, and if it's ingrained in him, he's out there. I can guarantee it.
Right. That's a fact. All right. Let's BS for a while. But before we do, I got to send a huge shout out to the partners of this podcast. If you guys are looking for a realistic, easy to tote around, very portable, I have a couple of them where it's almost like an accordion. They just smash down, fold up. You can put a strap around them. A decoy, that is Montana Decoy. Go check out montanadecoy.com for their They're very portable, very lifelike turkey decoys. And on top of that, they have a bunch of other decoys, deer, mule deer, cows, elks, all that stuff, So go check out MontanaDecoy.com. And then my company, Full Sneak Gear. If you want a t-shirt with a turkey on it to celebrate turkey season, go check out FullSneakGear.com. Okay.
I might have to order one of those, Dan.
I know. They're pretty badass. Let's talk about the psychopathic level in which you enjoy turkey season. Lay it out for me. Where does turkey hunting lay for you in the outdoors compared to fishing or deer hunting or any other outdoor activity?
You know, I always say if the good Lord said you had to pick one animal to hunt, one bird to hunt, it'd be the turkey, right? And that's how deep my love is for them. And I, you know, I think about them all year round, honestly, right? You know, if I'm driving down the road, hopefully my wife isn't in the car because she's yelling, because I'm always looking out. I'm looking, pay attention to driving, you know, my mind is constantly, you know, there's a meme out there with a guy's head out there and he's got a strutting turkey inside that head. I think, yeah. that's a good portrayal of what my brain looks like. Right. So, you know, ever since I was, 8 years old out there hunting with friends, my dad, you know, that first gobble just changed my life, to be honest with you. So,
yeah.
It's a passion, you know, as Mr. Hayes, as Toxie and the Mossy Oak guys say, it's an obsession. It truly is an obsession for me. And I know it's like that for many more. So,
yeah, for sure.
My choice is turkey regardless.
Okay. I like that answer. And by the way, I think they put those, what do they call them? Zip strips or the rumble strips on the side of the roads for guys like us where.
Exactly. Exactly. So I know I'm just about to hit the ditch on the right and I better not cross over the center line in the middle. Yeah, for sure.
I can't, like, I don't know how many times my wife has pretty much pooped her pants over the years. I'm like, Strutter, look at Strutter in the field. She's like, oh my God, watch out. You know? So
yeah, she's tightening up her seatbelt and grabbing the old handle up on the door for sure.
Yep. Absolutely. All right. You kind of mentioned 8 years old. Talk to me a little bit about like that first gobble, who got you into turkey hunting, maybe any type of mentors you had growing up.
Yeah, I mean, I've had, you know, my dad did not really hunt turkey, and I had a good friend his name was Eddie. I had two, an older gentleman, his name was George, and a younger friend, Eddie, who were, you know, they were big turkey hunters. And you know, my first gobble I heard at about eight, like I said, with one of those guys. And to be honest, I didn't know that turkeys really existed in Pennsylvania, right? Yeah. You know, I didn't know that a gobbler existed, you know, and it's a sound that, man, it's hard to replicate. You know, that turkey sound is a different sound out there. And, you know, when you hear it in the distance, it's magical. But when you have it in front of your face and he's just, you know, his face and your face are right there and you hear that and hear that spitting and drumming, man. I remember sitting, I was 8 years old. I remember I was in a small town not far from here. And we would go out in the morning and we'd listen to him before the season and roost him. That first drive sitting there, opened up the door, couple crows hollered, and I heard that gobble and at first I didn't know what it was, right? Cause I never heard him. And then when he started to really hammer, you know, that day, like I said, that changed my life. And, you know, I was hooked just listening to that turkey gobble.
Yeah.
So,
man, and that's a consistent theme on this podcast since I've, you know, taken it over and started talking to people about this kind of stuff is it almost seems like there's a single incident or a single thing that happened, like my buddy took me out or my dad took me out. And it all kind of comes back to the first gobble, which is like, once you've heard that, it's over. That's what you're doing. You're a turkey hunter at that point.
Yep. 100%. I mean, it's, you know, after that, I really got into it. I had a buddy who was also one of those same buddies who was hard into competition calling. So, you know, at about 12, I really started to get into it and, you know, and I know my parents, God bless them, you know, listening to me walk around the house using mouth calls and slate calls, trying to perfect it. You know, like I said, it once I caught that bug, Dan, I couldn't get rid of it, you know, yeah. And it's something that you think about constantly, right? You know, yeah. Perfecting the call, putting yourself in different situations, you know, but I was mm-hmm. thankful to have friends that did hunt turkeys who could kind of show me the way, you know, it's, you know, got me involved, you know, and I've done it for many others, you know, young guys, older guys, young kids, older guys. I mean, it's truly a sport that can be shared, and we need yeah. to share it, to be honest with you.
Yeah, for sure. What's the, like, did you get into any competition calling then?
I did. Okay.
And how'd that turn out for you?
You know, I didn't win the first one, right? Kept practicing. I ended up winning my first calling competition that, and I'll never forget it either. It was against, there was Matt Moret, one of the best callers out there. There's a lot of good callers in Pennsylvania. Mm. But I actually won the open division at the Harrisburg Sports Show, which is one of the biggest. It's coming up this week, and I'll be there working for a couple of days. Yep. But one of the biggest shows that that there is for the outdoor enthusiasts. But I actually won that, and that jump-started my calling contest career, and I started traveling. I think I was making more money winning calling contests than I was working my part-time job back in the day. So
yeah. Yeah. How old were you when you were doing that? At what age?
16, I started that.
Oh. Yep. Okay, so that's 16. Fairly early.
It was real early. We would be driving to we'd drive to New York. We'd drive to Ohio. You know, they have them this time of the year. You know, pretty much every weekend somewhere. So, yeah. And that's leading up. If you win one of those, you qualify to go to the NWATF Grand Nationals, you know, so never quite got on the big stage there, but did a lot of state competitions and was very successful. So,
yeah. Walk us through a typical calling tournament. What's it like qualifying? Like I'm used to like a wrestling tournament where, you know, it's double elimination, you versus yep. another person. Is like, break it down for us.
You don't get two opportunities. You get one yep. opportunity in front of the stage, right? Unless yep. there's a call off or something like that, but yep. you'll get four or five calls that you've got to pretty much walk up on the stage, and you'll have, there could be 50 people out there in front of you. You'll get, you know, like a cluck or a cluck and purr, adult assembly yelp. And you'll go through usually four or five calls. There'll be a panel of judges behind a curtain, and they'll judge you based off of, you know, those calls that you make. And at the end, pretty much you get your scores, and if you're on top, you win.
Yeah.
So, and there's pretty much a category for every call out there. Gobbling, you know, owl hooting. There's a bunch of different sections to call in. So.
Do they tell you in advance what your call is going to be, or is it like the Olympics where, mm-hmm. you know, it's like, okay, we're looking for this, 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 and this, and then it's up to you to put together a performance, let's say, that
right.
Includes all of those checkboxes?
No, they are outlined for you, so you can pretty much hone in and practice on those specific calls, you know, master those okay. calls for that specific contest.
Gotcha. So, okay. All right.
The answers to the test are there. You just got to master them.
Yeah. Right. Okay. So I'm going to use wrestling as the connecting point here again. Like my daughter, for example, she can go into a small town tournament and she can dominate, right? Mm-hmm. She can win, beat everybody. But this weekend, she got dominated.
Yep.
Because there's levels to everything, right? What's it like going from a regional or a small county or whatever tournament, and then qualifying for the Grand National tournament? What's that like?
Well, you know, to your point, the competition in Pennsylvania, I mean, all states nowadays is yeah. very, very tough. But yeah. when you get to the Grand Nationals, you've pretty much got the best of the best up there. You know, you've yeah. got a Jesse Martin up there. You've got a Matt Van Sice. And these are the guys that, you know, they're call makers. They're masters of the art. You know, they pretty much that, you know, you'll see consistent winners throughout the different, the categories at the Grand Nationals. But, it's truly the Super Bowl of turkey calling contest. So you've got to put some time and effort into it. Honestly, yeah. to want to beat one of those guys.
How much of it is theatrics as opposed to actual the sound and the calling? Because I've seen on, you know, on online,
yep,
you see
yep.
the guys out there like
they're very emotional with their they're almost like they're dancing.
They're becoming a turkey, Dan, honestly, on the stage, right?
Yeah.
You know, and you'll see different things where you'll see different, you know, hand gestures and whatnot. And there is a little bit of theatrics in it, but at the end of the day, the judges aren't seeing that theatrics. They're hearing those sounds, right? So they're basing the scores off of the sounds that the caller's making, honestly.
Okay. All right. I saw this one where a guy had a box of leaves
up there, and
he had a turkey wing with him, and he started off with like, an owl. He played out the scenario because he had an owl call, which then he turned into a shot gobble, and then that shot gobble turned into a turkey flying down.
Great.
And then it turned into scratching the leaves, and then a hen stepped up and started making her noise, and it escalated into an aggressive hen, which caused the gobbler to kick off. And so, if you closed your eyes, you would be envisioning a scenario like that anybody could have heard. Turkey hunting one day, and I thought that was pretty sweet.
100%. It's cool to watch too, and these guys are, like I said, the judges are looking for realism, so every sound, you know, I mean, that might trigger something in one of those judges you know for a couple extra points, and it makes a difference when you're, you know, you're losing by a point or winning by two. So but they get into it.
Is there a, I mean, like NBA players have deals, like what's the word I'm looking for?
Almost like the Neil, like NILs or
NILs and stuff like that.
And stuff like that.
Does Knight and Hale sponsor professional callers?
We've got a couple guys, and this year we've got a couple callers that will be calling up there. Yeah, that will be wearing some of our logo and
using your calls and all that stuff.
Using our calls, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
This is probably the first year in a while, but. We actually have some callers that will be there. I'll be working the booth, calling, talking to consumers and customers. Yeah. But yeah, we'll have some guys on the stage.
That's awesome. Okay. So the next question I have is, you got all this elaborate calling going on and people are studying and they're getting better and they're trying to win these tournaments. How much of that translates into the actual woods where you're trying to call a Tom in and shoot him?
From a hunting perspective, you know, I've hunted for a long time, Dan, and I've heard some really awful turkeys in the woods who I thought were hunters. So to say that it helps, sure it does help, right?
Yeah.
But from a consistency of killing turkeys, I look at a couple things. Being where they want to be and utilizing a call, right, to make the sounds that you need to kill that turkey.
Right.
You know, so you do not have to be a master of the call to go out and hunt turkeys and have fun. Calling contest, a little bit different scenario. In the woods, you could sound like an old hen that just, you know, ate a couple rocks, and you might get a yelp out, a cluck, and, you know, that turkey still might come into you. So I say there's a little bit of crossover, but to most, you do not have to be a great caller to kill a turkey. Now, later in the season, it could change. You know, you got to change up. You know, the guy scratching in the leaves.
Yeah.
You know, the wings. You know, there's some things that you could use or pull out of the bag to help you kill that turkey, and it might not be calling, right? Yeah. Scratching in the leaves or whatnot. So does it help? Yes.
Yeah.
But is it 100% needed? No.
Yeah. I can remember one of the very first times I ever went hunting with my uncle, and I was used to deer hunting at that point where I was like, okay, we got to be extremely quiet, no noise. And so I'm opening the truck door very quietly and I'm shutting it very quietly. And my uncle, he lights up a cigarette and he's keeping the truck door open. And he's like, just typical smoker hacker cough, you know, just cracking a Mountain Dew or whatever, you know, just like envision what I'm talking about here.
Yeah. Yep.
And then the sun's coming up and he's just talking to me in a normal voice. Like we're talking here. Right? I'm like, and I'm whispering back to him thinking, oh, I'm going to lead by example here and be quiet. And he's like, what are you being quiet for? Like all this stuff. And then it's hilarious because as the sun starts to come up, he heard an owl hoot. And that was his sign, right? And he took his truck door and he slammed it as hard as he could. And it shot gobbled a Tom. And he's like, let's go. And then that's the direction we went. And it's crazy how, and this is in all hunting or trapping or fishing, there's guys that have the head to toe highest end camo with the highest end calls. And then you got guys who go out with no calls and they're making it with their own mouth and they're using a shotgun that's 50 years old and they're getting the job done on this stuff. And so I always found that discrepancy more real in turkey hunting than in any other sport. Like fishing or whatever.
You know, you say that, and I had a buddy, you know, I know you're a big whitetail guy, and to that same point, he would go out, here I am, you know, I'm running, I'm putting my clothes in a dry wash, I'm getting dressed in the woods, I'm packing all this stuff, and, you know, he's going to the stand, sitting, smoking a cigarette, and kills a 160, and yeah, I'm like,
exactly.
And I'm thinking to myself, am I the idiot? Am I stupid? You know, I don't smoke, but maybe I need to start. So, to that point though, you don't have to have, you know, the most expensive gear we can go buy a $12 mouth call and, you know, get you cranking and you can be out in the woods with some mossy oak or whatever. And, your dad's old 12 gauge or 410 at this point, you know, everyone's using 410s at this point. So it's a low entry sport and you don't have to spend a lot of money to have fun, honestly. So,
yeah. So this is do you know Paul Campbell? He used to work for the NWTF for a while.
Yes. Yes. I know of him.
This is the story that pisses him off the most because he is intense about turkey hunting. And so I'm driving down the country roads during turkey season, and I had come out of a morning hunt, and I drive by and I see a turkey like in the field, and he's strutting around a black garbage bag that got caught on a corn stalk and was blowing in the wind. And I'm like, that Tom is so out of his mind. He thinks that trash can is a hen. Or that trap. This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo, shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. Trash bags of hen, because it was blowing in the wind. It was full of air and it just was. Anyway, I cut into that timber that I had permission to be in. I cut down this drainage, walk right up it, walk to the field edge, creep in, sit down. And this turkey is strutting in big circles around this trash bag. And finally it got close enough to me and I shot it. And that story pisses him off so much. Because I used a trash bag to kill a turkey and he's out there, you know, like he's that guy, right? He's taking the vacation. He's doing the head to toe gear and, you know, all that stuff. And so that's the one that pisses him off the most. And I love telling his
process, but by the sounds of it, we need to start buying trash bags and selling them out there. I think we might have a little bit of a special angle, you know, right?
What? The old, the truck door call, the trash bag decoy.
You think about all the stuff that makes a turkey gobble. And then some of the things, I mean, some of the decoys we first started with, geez, it looked like a guy went and ripped his couch apart and, you know, cut a little bit of foam out, painted it up, and, you know, we were hunting with it, you know, compared to what they are today, truly, you know, so
100%.
They've come a long way. So they have.
We're leaving today and entering a world of Mickey Mouse waving. princess meeting and greeting.
Lightsaber clashing.
The Twilight Zone Tower of Terror dropping.
Banshee flying.
Space Mountain launching.
Galaxy rewinding.
What is the whole deck with galaxy rewinding?
Fireworks igniting. World of other worlds. For whatever you love. Infinite worlds await at the most magical place on Earth. Walt Disney World Resort.
Sierra has all the best active and outdoor brands you need, from athletic stuff, like a full-court pickup game, swish, to athletic-ish stuff, like a half-mile stroll. Get those steps in! And for morning hikes up the mountain trail, good pace, to nighttime ghost stories from the camping chair. What a twist! Whatever level of active, Sierra loves it all. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
In your position with Night and Hail and just being the intense turkey hunter that you are, have you, like, I'm sure you've talked to a lot of old timers from back in the day when maybe turkey hunting in the North wasn't even a thing and turkey hunting in the South was rocking and rolling already. What are some, maybe it's ridiculous to the average turkey hunter, or some strategies or tactics that some of these old timers would tell you, and you'd be like, what's going on here?
Yeah. Well, one of those stories I think even comes from Harold and what he had to do. You know, we were hunting with him not long ago, and, you know, there weren't really calls around. They were trying to master some of these calls, but he would be utilizing, I mean, he'd pick up blades of grass out there and put them between his fingers, and he would be making calls. You know, turkey calls weren't around at that point in time. Like you said, there weren't a lot of turkeys, and there weren't a lot of, you know, I guess there weren't a lot of resources that helped the hunter kill them. And I think they, you know, obviously the more you do something, the more you learn about it. You know, so to your point, you know, slamming a truck door for the first time going out turkey hunting, and you hear that turkey gobble, you know, you start to put two and two together, right? You're sitting out there, you're going through these experiences to find out what you need to do to kill a turkey, right? So yeah. I think a lot of those introductory guys, you know, even having conversations with him, you know, it was scouting that turkey, going out in the mornings, listening to them, and then setting up where they, you know, where they were in strut zones or roosting areas, because they really didn't have a lot of information back then, you know, from a call standpoint or whatnot. And these pioneers, you know, they started to make these calls. You know, David and Harold, I mean, they were, you know, it's a story they tell. They were going down and buying, you know, condoms from the local store to cut latex to spread over top of a tube call, you know, to make the sounds, to make those sounds, right? You know, so it's come a long way, but I think they've obviously adjusted over time to help all of us become turkey hunters, better turkey hunters. And really, I don't know what I would have done back then, Dan, if I had to go down to the local store and buy a bunch of condoms to, you know, what's your, man, you know, what do you say to that? You know, and they're stretching turkey calls, you know, to kickstart a company that now is a, you know, an ultimate brand. But man, that's a story that I just don't know if I could tell it. So
it would be funny, especially if there was like, it was a very small town, right? And some guy's going in to buy condoms, and everybody starts rumors like, hey, he's married. Why is he buying condoms? He's married.
I'm sure there was a lot of comical relief about, you know, or conversations that were going around back then.
Right.
You know, so, but, you know, they had a love and a passion, man, and they were finding a way to get stuff done. And, you know, obviously here we are, you know, mouth calls are, you know, a key part to killing turkeys nowadays. So
this question just popped in my head, so I have to ask it. Okay.
Yeah.
In your opinion, who's the Mount Rushmore of turkey hunting in the United States?
The Mount Rushmore in terms of where to kill turkeys?
No. The Mount Rushmore of who? Like, who's the best of the best? Who's, or maybe the most influential, the people who, like, can you put a list together of four people that are just head and tails above everybody else or make a cut for you?
You know, I don't look at it in the amount of turkeys they kill, but to say that, you know, when I look back in time and who I grew up with, the pioneers of this industry and who started it. Obviously, I'm going to say Nightin Hill, but I'm also going to Will Primos and Primos Game Calls. Mm-hmm. You know, the Kirby's at Quaker Boy. You know, there's Ben Lee, and these guys are way before my time. But I was fortunate enough to have some videos on them back then. There's pillars. Those pillars were influential in a lot of people getting out there and hunting turkey. But I would say that, you know, that group there is a group that probably, you know, changed turkey hunting and helped catapult it to where it is today.
Yeah, that's fair. And that's the crazy part is Quaker Boy, right? You said that was the Kirby's who did
that?
Yes, sir. Yeah, mm-hmm. I don't like that's foreign to me. So I got to get, on my horse if I'm going to do this podcast and start educating myself of who some of these people are.
Obviously Nightin Hill is the best, right? But
right,
I still
absolutely.
You know, it's when you look at it, I look at it from a perception of we're all good for what we want to do. And, you know, whether it be conservation, whether it just be, you know, helping the hunter be more successful in the woods, you know, so we're all, the ultimate goal is for the good of all of us. So, you know, they're competitors, but you know what, at the end of the day, you know, we're trying to accomplish one thing, you know, so, and that's to help the hunter.
Yeah, that's a fact. That's a fact. Okay. What's your season look like here coming up? I mean, you got a schedule put together, how many states you hunting, what's the deal?
Yeah, so I'm going to start, we've obviously got some shows to get through here, and they're exciting shows. I've got the Great American Outdoor Show this weekend coming up. I'm going to be there for a couple of days, and then we'll be at NWTF. And then after that, my first hunt, I head to Florida to hunt the Osceola. So I'll be there opening weekend, excited about that. You know, we've got 20 feet of snow here, or 20 inches of snow, right? It feels like 20 feet because it's not going away, but 20 inches of snow and it's cold. From there, I'll be entertaining some people in New Jersey, a couple accounts that we have, actually some Mossy Oak guys too. Jason Hart's coming in to hunt with some of those guys. And as these seasons open up, you know, Ohio will be after New Jersey. And then I'll take a weekend to take my son actually to Maryland. So that's kind of something that we've put on the schedule every year. You know, I get him down there. He's got the bug just like I do in terms of killing turkeys and loves it. So which I'm thankful for, honestly. And then we'll end up back here in good old state of Pennsylvania. So we got about a 4 or 5 state run to make.
What's the opening day in Florida? What's that?
Florida is it's the earliest season it opens up, and it opens up March 7th.
March 7th. And have you hunted that before?
I've personally not hunted down there. I've hunted with people down there. I haven't killed one. I'm always kind of behind the scenes and helping them kill turkeys, but this will be the first year I'm going to pull the trigger on one down there.
All right, perfect. So what's the vegetation like down there already? Is it already starting to green up in March or not?
Yeah, it's you know, obviously they're south, so they're way ahead of us, you know, and those turkeys right now are probably already starting. They've probably broken up in their, it's not really winter, but they did get a little bit of cold weather down there. So they'll start to break up out of those flocks, and you'll have those gobblers start to establish kind of their areas, you know, just like a white-tailed deer. And, you know, they'll start the breeding pattern and the pecking order and who's the boss and, you know, the fights that are going on out there. I'm sure they're getting kicked up right now, but it's pretty green down there about the time we get down there. Yeah.
Yeah. Talk to me a little bit about this Maryland hunt that sounds like it's kind of a tradition that you do with your boy. Walk me through that.
You know, we've been going down there just because it's a bordering state. It's easy to get to, but we've kind of made it a tradition. We've got a great little cabin on top of the hill. It's got great scenery. You're up as high as you could possibly be in the Maryland mountains, but, I know he looks forward to it, and I kind of put it on him to plan it, you know, and I'll throw the ball. He's hunted enough now where he can kind of make some of the decisions. So I let him kind of make those decisions on where we're going to go, you know, what are we taking? You packing everything up? What calls are we going to use? So I've kind of pushed the ball to him now. He's 12 years old where he's killed enough turkeys where, you know, I let him plan it out, but it's something that I really truly enjoy every year. We don't know what we're running into weather. Sometimes it could be snowing down there, Dan, honestly, yeah. And it can be cold. So, but the thing about it is just, you know, getting down there every year, hearing that first turkey with him and kind of getting back into the game, so to speak, is something that I look forward to every year. So, yeah.
Have you gotten your grand slam yet? Have you attempted that at all?
So if I kill this turkey in Florida, you know, right. Because you never put the cart in front of the horse. Yeah. That'll be it.
Okay.
I've just never, you know, I've had many offers to go down. I've just never really done it. And, you know, I said, you know what, I'm just going to go down and kill one this year. So this will be the last one I need. So.
Gotcha. Okay. So aside from that bird, that species, talk to me a little bit about your other experiences with, and I think for just conversation's sake, the Rio and the Merriam. Talk to me about how they're the same, how they're different, things like that.
Sure. Well, obviously everyone wants to kill all four subspecies of turkeys, right? Merriam in my eyes is probably one of the beautiful, probably the prettiest turkey in terms of all the turkeys. It's got real, really white, you know, buff tips. Even on the feathers on the backside, you know, they gobble really good. Don't really have long beards, which doesn't matter to me. You know, as long as it gobbles, I'm shooting it. A little bit out there, it's a little bit more, how do I want to say it? If you work the lay of the land, it's easier to kill.
Yeah.
Compared to a Rio's a little bit, he's a loudmouth, so to speak. He likes to gobble. They like to come running in. There's lots of them down there in Texas, right? So I really enjoy hunting the Rio, especially if you're taking kids, because the interaction with Rios are really good. They gobble a lot, you know, compared to what we have up here. These hard-headed Easterns are a little bit tougher sometimes, but, you know, from a picturesque on the wall type of deal, I really love looking at my Merriam just cause he's a pretty turkey, but you know what? You could, even if they weren't subspecies and they all gobbled and had beards, I'd still be shooting them. So it doesn't matter.
Right. And where did you kill your Merriam at?
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
This episode is brought to you by Peloton. Break through the busiest time of year with the brand new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus. Powered by Peloton IQ. With real-time guidance and endless ways to move, you can personalize your workouts and train with confidence, helping you reach your goals in less time. Let yourself run, lift, sculpt, push, and go. Explore the new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus at onepeloton.com.
South Dakota.
Okay. All right.
So you can kill them South Dakota, Wyoming, you know, different areas in Nebraska. So, yeah, usually most hunters go to South Dakota to hunt the Merriam.
Gotcha. Okay, cool. Yeah, I mule deer hunt in South Dakota, and I've seen them in the river bottoms in pretty big flocks, too, you know, down there. So that's always been I have a couple other bucket lists I want to kind of accomplish before I get into it. But I think just as an outdoorsman, I know it doesn't matter. But to me, I'm like, I think it'd be cool to kill the Grand Slam.
Absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
Get all of them and expand my wings a little bit, especially since I go out to South Dakota anyway. And I got a lot of people I know that live right on the Red River there between Texas and Oklahoma where the Rios hang out. So, I can,
those river bottoms hold a lot of those turkeys, to be honest with you. I mean, they're around water. They need water.
Yeah.
Even in Texas, but those, that's pretty much where we killed ours on a river bottom, of the Missouri out there. Yeah. So I actually stayed it's a funny story. We drove 24 hours to get out there, hunted 3 days, killed 12 turkeys and come back. But we stayed at an Indian reservation. It was a casino. So I can only imagine what they were thinking about us coming in and out of there. So,
let's talk, you know, let's talk a little bit about the process now. And, And if you want to throw in a different process and talk maybe about the similarities and differences on your strategy going into a different subspecies, or we can stick with Easterns, I'm going to leave it up to you. But what I'd like to do is talk about the strategy that you use, maybe from are you roosting the birds, or maybe you're not, to the point where in the mornings you're stepping out of the truck and you're trying to chase them down. So walk us through your process.
Yeah, I mean, typically we'll do some scouting prior to the season, right? And now's a time where we still got big wintering flocks here, so they're not really broken up. They're not in there what I would call their, you know, their spring pattern yet. So typically, you know, week or so before the season, I'll listen to those turkeys because they start to break up a little bit more. Right. And you have four or five gobblers that were all together and buddies, and now they're separating in different spots and kind of, like I said, establishing their territory. But after that first week, if we're talking first day, what I like to do is, you know, I'll pick one of those turkeys out. We'll get close to them. You know, we'll listen to them. If I can roost them the night before, around here, it just all depends on the turkey. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they'll gobble in the evening. Sometimes they won't. You know, a lot of times like Rios are a little bit different than Merriam's. I mean, the ultimate goal is to kind of map out your hunt prior to going on it, right? You want to know where they're at, where you need to be in the morning. And I will try to get close with them. But if I can roost them, that just helps me out in the morning to get to where I need to be. So if I can get the pinpoint on where he is the night before, you can rest assured that I'll be pretty close to him in the morning, you know, trying to gain an upper edge just in terms of the ground between him and I. So,
right.
You know, but, roosting key part helps out for sure, but doesn't always mean that, you're going to kill him that next morning. So,
right. They got this, you know, obviously they have a 365 degree escape route because, you know, especially when they're in the tree, they can fly across the river if they need to or whatever. How do you ensure, or maybe not ensure, but take the best educated guess to put yourself in a position to where they're going to fly down and start working their way towards you?
Sure. And that's tough first, you know, that first week, they're still usually got a lot of hens with them. Mm-hmm. And I think, putting a game plan together, putting your, you know, what I would call your homework that you did prior to the season, you know, there's times where I'll go out and even sit and watch him a little bit, you know, prior to the season opening, just kind of seeing where his pattern is. But to your point, they can go anyway.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not only that bird that you're competing with specifically or you're up against, it's all those hens that he's got with him too, because if one hen makes the decision to go the other way, usually he's going to follow him in that early season. Right.
Yeah.
You know, so that's why, you know, when you look at, you know, a group of birds and you've got last year's Jakes, they're 2 year olds this year and they're ready to gobble. They're trying to establish their dominance within the pecking order, you know? So a lot of times what you do or what you get off of that roost is those 2 year olds that have been beat up by that older guy in that group or older gobbler. And those are the guys that you get to come in. And I love hunting those 2 year old because they want to gobble. They want to come in, they're ready, and they make it easy sometimes, especially if you've got a little guy out there, you know, who's ready to pull the trigger.
Yep, absolutely. They're almost designed to die you know what I mean? Like
perfect candidate for me. I love every one of them.
Exactly. And those are the ones that, you know, I always try to get my kids, you know, there's a big strutter out there, but these two back here, you know, Tom and Harry, they're talking to us. So let's go towards this guy. And so, yeah, I love the 2 year olds. Outside of that, you know, obviously putting yourself in a position early season can be difficult, especially during, you know, the toms being henned up throughout most of the morning. Is there a time of day that you feel, let's just stick with early season in that April timeframe in all general terms here. Is there a time of day that these toms become the most vulnerable in your position? In your opinion?
Yeah. I mean, I would say, you know, when you look at the season and you break the season down in different phases, you know, that early season, when they're really truly henned up, you may have to put a little bit more time in, right? My timing on, you know, from a success rate is, you know, usually that 10 to 12, you know, that early morning, they've got the system down. They've been doing it for, you know, the last month or so, and they've had their hens, they're breeding those hens, and they're starting to lose those hens. And, you know, if you don't kill them right off the roost, you know, you're probably going to have to put a little bit more time in, you know. So that being said, I've had a lot of success when those hens leave the gobbler, they're going the nest, or, you know, they're getting away. Mm-hmm. And it seems that 10 to 12 can be a really, really good time to kill a turkey, to be honest with you. You know, he gets a little bit more lonely, or, you know, like I said, he lost his hens, and guess what? He's ready to look for another one. And if you're still out there putting the time in, I would say that's a pretty darn good time to harvest one, you know, if you do put that time in.
Yeah. What about as like afternoons? The biggest, most mature tom that I have ever killed, was at, well, I was calling for a kid that I took hunting, but he killed it, man. It was like 6 o'clock in the evening.
Is that right?
Yep. On the way back, it was like third season in April here in Iowa. And, I don't think he was necessarily coming back to roost, but we had been working him so much throughout the last, like, we popped in there at like 4 o'clock just to, like, a Hail Mary, try to get him roosted. But we saw him out in this pasture, and he came off a hen to come investigate what we were doing. And we called him and ended up working him to like 6:30 and shot him at that point. Do you ever run into toms being responsive in late afternoon?
I have. It's less than what it usually is in the morning. To your point, I think it's just finding a bird that, you know, he wants to work. In that situation, right in PA, for instance, you can't hunt all day. So, the first half of the season, you're done at noon. The second half of the season, you can hunt, in the afternoons. But I've seen more success in the mornings were up until that noon time than I have in the evenings. Now, that being said, if I'm on a hunt somewhere and they allow me to hunt in the afternoons, I'm all about it. You know, you got to take advantage of all the time you've got when you're there. And I'll shoot one at 6 o'clock just as quickly as I would at 8 o'clock in the morning. So by no means is there a difference, but I do think, you know, that those turkeys are definitely more responsive in the early morning and up to, like I said, that noon, 1 o'clock time frame.
Yeah. Talk to me a little bit about your calling strategy, if there is one for you, when it comes to a bird in the roost to try to get him to come to you, or that positioning to put yourself in a position where maybe the hen comes by and drags the tom with, or the tom comes in independently.
Yeah. I mean, setting up in the mornings, I usually start off pretty soft, you know, tree calls in the morning, you know, just a little bit of yelping, just to let them know I'm there. Right. You know, so you can take the temperature of that turkey pretty quickly. You know, if he's cutting you off as soon as you're calling to him in the morning, you know, generally I'll kind of slow up, let him fly down and see what he wants to do, you know. And there's a lot of variables right in between all that. You know, how many hens does he have with him? You know, does he have any hens with him? If he doesn't, great. You're probably in a good situation. And that first initial experience with him in the morning in the tree, like I said, I don't call a whole lot. I just let him know I'm there. Right. And then when he hits the ground is when I'll either increase that calling or decrease it, depending on, you know, we all want to hear the turkey gobble, right?
Right.
But at the end of the day, I also want to kill him, you know. But I'll take his temperature. If he's answering to me, I'll pick that calling up a little bit more when he hits the ground. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe it's some aggressive yelping or purring, clucking, scratching in the leaves, trying to get his attention. And I usually set a little bit of time frame in between that, right? You know, I'll do a calling sequence, see what he wants to hear, what he doesn't want to hear. I'll lay off of him a little bit more, and then I'll pick it back up, you know. And like I said, you can kind of gauge the temperature of that turkey and see what he likes and what he doesn't like. So,
yeah. Is there such thing as overcalling?
I think there is. Yeah, I think there is. But we get, you know, we get so ingrained to wanting, like I said, wanting to hear that turkey gobble just because you love hearing that sound that, you know, you, in my mind, I'm not thinking and we're talking, you know, I'm talking to the turkey just like I'm talking to you now and he's responding. So I want to keep calling. But when you do that, you know, you're changing the dynamics of Mother Nature where the hen usually goes to him.
Right, right.
And that's how it's supposed to work. You know, he's not supposed to come to you. You're supposed to go to him. So what I try to do and what I try to tell guys and even my son taking him, I'm like, you don't want to keep having the conversation with him to the point where, you know, you're pushing him away. So taking a break, giving him 5-10 minutes, make him think that, oh, maybe that hen left, you know, I need to go over there and check it out. Is a situation that you need to play through in your mind. And it's hard because you're sitting there and you're excited and, you know, he's gobbling and you're just not thinking. But I think that you need to sometimes take a break, right, and think about what I'm trying to do in that situation.
Yeah. I'm notorious for overcalling, dude. I'm just like, I need him to gobble, and then it's just a hen walking in the opposite direction of where I'm at and pulling every other bird with her. So it's almost like my favorite is when I'm calling too much and then a hen makes one purr or a cluck, and it's not the runaway scared, you know, call. It's the, man, this chick is annoying me and I'm going the other direction and pulls everybody else with her. Right. So,
And it's happened more, times than you can count.
Exactly. Exactly. The last question I want to ask you today is your thoughts on reaping.
Yeah. Listen, I don't judge. You can kill a turkey any way you can if it's legal and it's, you know, you're good with it. In my area, it's definitely not something that I recommend. And, you know, if you're on a private farm and it, you feel safe, great. It's something we don't do, honestly, around here, you know, and I'm not saying it's right or wrong. You know, if it's legal and you can do it, perfect. I'm just, in my eyes, you know, we just something we don't do. And I've never, you know, I can honestly say, Dan, that I've never reaped a turkey. Or went to them. There's a lot of hunters in Pennsylvania, even though there's a lot of private ground. Some guys don't pay attention to some things, but if you're going to do it, just pay attention to the scenario, your surroundings, you know, make sure you know who's in that area. And, you know, and just be safe doing it. That's all. You know?
I'll tell you this. It wasn't reaping. I don't think there was a term for it, but I had this decoy and I was belly crawling along this fence line towards over the ridge where at this little bottom of this cattle pasture, there was a strutting tom. And I was trying to get up there to put the decoy. And I looked to my left inside the timber and there's a 12 gauge pointing at me. And that was the last time I ever did anything like that, because getting shot with that kind of bird shot would hurt a lot. And I just am like, I'm not, it ain't worth it, especially if you don't know who else is on the property that you hunt.
So, safety first, and then, you know, after that, have as much fun as you can.
All right, Jimmy, last question. What's your goal for this season?
You know, my goal this season is to, you know, and I try to always set a goal for my turkey seasons is maybe to experience it with someone who hasn't hunted yet. And I've got a few candidates out there. That's always my goal, is to take someone else out there, get them involved, you know, because we need more and more hunters involved in this sport. And, it's, you know, it's my passion. It's my excitement. I know you love it too, you know, so, and turkey hunting is an interaction sport, you know, it's not as individual, right? You know, going sitting in a tree stand or whatnot. And, but, and after that is to enjoy a few more memories with my family members and friends. So, that's what I look forward to.
That sounds like a damn good goal to me, my friend. Jimmy, man, I really appreciate you taking time out of your day to hop on and BS with me for a little bit. Everybody go check out Night and Hail and their full lineup of calls and what they're building over there. It's a little, you know, I've
talked about this before, but it's a little bit of a rebirth going on over at Nightingale. And I know a lot of people are excited about that. But outside of that, man, hopefully all your wildest turkey dreams come true this year, Jimmy. And I get to see some hero picks with you behind.
We'll send you some picks for sure. My brain's already, I'm counting gobblers and turkeys and, and all kind of things every night I go to bed. So my wife has it on the TV. She's probably sick of it already. So she's hadn't started yet, but
amen. Amen. All right, my friend. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Dan.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.